Well, it's about darn time that we brought some poetry back to the Northland and the airwaves. And who better to help us do that than Jamie Harvey, who joins us this morning on the phone, noted environmentalist and a poetry fan, as I'm discovering, out of nowhere. How did you manage to, all the years that I have known you, Jamie Harvey, how did you manage to keep the topic on environmental issues and medical equity issues and not tell me that you were a fan of poetry?
There's many secrets that I keep from you, Lisa, but I would actually offer that these things are all connected.
And, Annie Dugan was talking just yesterday about how excited she gets about the intersection of science and art and math and art. Now, I'll buy into the science and art thing. The minute anything intersects with math, I have an anxiety attack. But maybe there's an intersection between medicine and math that might be useful to me. But I think that's a different topic. Before we get started, we're going to talk about a fascinating new poetry series that folks can take advantage of. But before we do that, I had been pestering you during the run of our previous poetry series where I was asking people who came from somewhere else, air quotes, to share poetry in perhaps their native language that really speaks to them, that makes, that kind of brings that sense of home and that really resonates with them in terms of where they're from, the beauty of the original language, whatever it might be. And I've been after you for a long time now to read a poem in Canadian. And you finally, I was finally able to strong arm you into doing it. So I would like you to talk about your poem briefly, read the poem, and then I want to hear about this new poetry series.
Sure thing. So this is a poem by Ingrid Ruthig from her collection Just Being. And it's called Pertangan Arrivals. And Pangertung's a town on Baffin Island. I don't know why it spoke to me last night, but perhaps because my dad spent a lot of time in the Arctic. And this the poem speaks of Arctic char, and I remember him bringing home Arctic char, which we would eat, but also touches on climate change and just sort of the changing of seasons. So in some ways, it makes me feel at home, connected to my father, who I love dearly. Even though I haven't spent a whole lot of time in the Arctic myself. So here goes. Never spied a white pine up here, but time was when monster gods appeared to ancestors, real as fact, to restock the story banks with fear. Grandfather spoke of ghostmen with snow-bitten skin, with eyes of queer light, and their vessels lodged tight in the hard flow. Visions now for those not flown to less cloistered lives are strange. Red chars turned white. Meltwater floods out the permafrost bridge, while north strained jays and robins telltale an arrival and a departure. Another shard of ice cap cracks, tips, and now loose strays south to shrink from view. While I try to imagine how the story might end, pines with the future here, seeding new tales to relay beneath the aurora sphere.
That is lovely. I'll get the information about that poem for you, too, so that folks can look up the poem, they can look up the author, and that's how you discover new poets. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. You know, and see here, I was thinking Robert Service. I have such a limited imagination. And he wrote all of those marvelous but often kind of lampooned poems about, you know, cannibalism around an open fire up in the Arctic. You know, I was dog sledding and now I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. And Robert Service wrote a lot of, he must have been an interesting person to be one of his friends. You wouldn't want to go on any expedition with that guy, I'm guessing.
Yeah. People always turn to Robert Service. Claire Caldwell, I'll send you some of her work. It's just incredibly beautiful, invasive species. But in any case.
Oh, how marvelous. Yeah. This is how we expand our horizons. This is what social media is actually for, to expand your horizons with authors and poets that perhaps, and of course music that perhaps you hadn't been exposed to before. So it didn't surprise me at all, however, when I was hearing from Phil Fitzpatrick that you were going to be kind of a special guest star for the new poetry series. Talk about this new the series is called Climate Change Poetry or something, which are not necessarily words that I'm used to seeing right next to each other.
It's a climate emergency poetry series.
Even more.
That emergency kind of puts a special twist on things, I think, or it does at least for me, because it I think heightens the urgency of our times and for us to come together to explore how we might move forward and help transition the way we, as a species, act together and work together. But really beautiful. Credit goes out to John Harold and Phil Fitzpatrick, who have been core champions at putting this together.
You know, we just learned in a story last week, or I just learned rather in a story last week, that as folks move forward with the idea of, Tone Lanzillo was talking about this, and he was saying that as people try to get other people on board about climate change, we're kind of moving into the area now where many people are aware of it and they realize that it's happening. And now we move into the place where we need to not only take individual action, but we need to do some pressuring of our elected officials to take action. And he said that the people are discovering that the way to get folks on board with this idea is to tell them individual stories. You can kind of quote, apparently you can quote facts at people until the cows come home, but it's the individual stories of this is how my life has changed, or this is what I have seen on my farm, or fill in the blank, that can really move people to take action. How do you feel that poetry is positioned to do that for folks? What do you think the role of the Climate Emergency Poetry Series is in the movement going forward?
I guess I come from the place that our outer world is a function of our inner world, right? And we have created this highly structured world, this civilization, if you want to call it that, where white men are predominantly at the top or at the top. And we've created these hierarchies of human value, of whites over the global majority, of man over women, of human life over all life, right? And it's these structures, this hierarchical structure is built on this notion of sort of the world as a machine, that it works, our bodies work like machines, that we're everything, life is predictable. And it's a way to kind of protect us, because it's kind of scary to imagine that life is unpredictable. But that's a really the reality we live in. So I think as we hit climate and the impacts from our way of thinking, right, that's deeply embedded into our culture and our judicial system, education system, everywhere. It's so deeply embedded that it's hard to even see how it influences us as a species. And I think what poetry does is it takes us from our mind to our hearts, right? And allows us to imagine. And even in that poem that I read, you can start to, you know, You transcend you move away from sitting at your chair in front of your computer or wherever you might be, and it's in that place where that we are all connected, because I guess I'm firmly of the belief that we are of a world where all life is intimately connected, and that this 300 or 400 year old experiment of hierarchy and control, it's not working. And so climate change, the impact or is the symptoms of a old way of thinking. And so poetry allows us to move from our heads to our hearts and sort of explore the mystery of what's life, right? And I think that's the beauty of not only poetry, really, but of art. And why I get excited by this series, and why the arts are so important, because we have to envision a different future. We have to. And if there's and we need tools to do that, but it really needs tools to unlock us as human beings, for us to feel, because our whole culture tells us we're machines. But really, we're sentient beings. We're intimately connected to all life. We smell, we feel, we laugh, we cry. And if we deny that, then we're lost, right? So we have to go back and remember who we are, right? That we aren't machines. And there is no technology that is going to get us out of our climate crisis. But it's our internal way of thinking if anything, is going to help minimize the disruption that we are going to start feeling increasingly.
I think that that impulse to impose control is deeply ingrained. And although it's easy to say, here is where man tried to control the natural world, and here is where men tried to control society, there are obviously, and I suppose this is pejorative, but there are power games that go on in our conversations with one another every day. And unless we've somehow become sensitized to it and we're looking for it and we've been trained, perhaps given some insight into it, we're not even aware about the constant little tiny power struggles that are going on all the time. Sometimes those power struggles are important. They're part of setting a boundary. Sometimes they're our scared self trying to say, this is how things have to be. Do we need to incorporate, I guess I'm curious, do we need to incorporate, along with the art, do we need to incorporate maybe some psychology, maybe some better coping skills, maybe some better tactics? Because if we've never seen these things modeled, it's exactly what you were saying about what we need to envision. If we've never seen these things modeled, we've heard it said on this show before, you can't be it if you can't see it. So what else do we need to add into the, what else do we need to add into the equation to help give people the examples and the skills to move forward in a healthy way?
Well, all around us, you're seeing a whole, including, we have young poets who are going to be showing up for the next series and doing some readings. You look at them, I'm absolutely inspired. And I think you can look around this country and around the globe, there's all these exciting models. The New Economy Coalition and the models that are being developed are built on the concepts of collaboration and resiliency and interdependence, right? Because that's really reflective of this living planet on which we're all part of. And so there are many models. You look at the NUCA system, you were talking about healthcare earlier on. The NUCA system of care is built on this, in Alaska, is built on this beautiful indigenous worldview of interconnectedness, and having tremendous transformations in individual health of the communities, right? We're seeing cooperative movements, worker-owned cooperatives building up, growing around the country and so changing different types changing whole new economic ecosystems. So they're out there, but I think what the poetry does and the conversation that you and I are having today are helping people suddenly see these signposts, like, oh, I get it what Lisa and Jamie were talking about, or I get it what, Tone was speaking about the other time, right? Or when I think of these new business models that are burgeoning around the country, you can find them everywhere, right? That people are like, oh, it's that different framework about connection and collaboration, and that's the new story. So it's language, it's like it's everywhere. But I think we have to. The job that I guess I see playing a part of and others is is helping alert people to these signposts. So it's all part and parcel of this incredible transformation that's happening around the globe. I was just on a webinar with the Institute of the Environment through the University of Minnesota, and someone else on the panel, a colleague from the Twin Cities, which I was sort of sharing how we're in this place of deep ecological grief, right? And if we don't acknowledge that, it's hard for us to move forward. So I think one part of that is recognizing that we're feeling beings, kind of what I was sharing before. But if we don't do that grief part of it, right, it's like, what have we done? Then we can't move forward. And this, my colleague Teddy was sharing how to this sort of this next young generation of students was saying how, you know, listen, Jamie and I, she was referring to myself, right, we've been knocking on trying to sort of knock on the windows and saying, listen, it's the whole design of our society that's been broken, right? But now there's an awareness that it's the whole design, right? And so instead of like fruitless, like sort of instead of I don't know, I'm mixing metaphors here, but instead of moving chairs on the Titanic, what we're doing is building a whole new ship together. But you have to remember, this is deeply built into the American psyche. Even, you know, the Declaration of Independence from what? Right? We're all interconnected. So even some of the language, you're talking about language, so much our language is does us a disservice. But there's when you look at the Me Too movement, you look at Black Lives Matter, it's a dismantling of these structures, right? So look at the language in there. It's about co-creations, about resilience, it's interdependency. That's the life. We live on this beautiful living planet, and that those are the language and the models and the processes that we're seeing sort of springing up, growing, and being fostered around the globe are tremendously exciting.
Jamie, let's take just a second. Do you have a rundown handy of the event that's coming up on April 18th? We'll get some information, obviously, linked on our webpage so people can attend the event virtually. And I know that you're hoping that as the spring progresses into summer, that these events are going to be able to take place in person and maybe outside in the sunshine. But for now, we're going to do the virtual thing. What do folks have to look forward to on the April 18th event?
Right. So we have some poets from four local high schools, and Steen and Myra from UMD. So Ella Grimm, Daniela Metuega from Marshall. I'm apologizing if I'm mispronouncing some of these names wrong, but Izzy Lederman and Crystal Kazmarsik from East. So they'll be doing some readings, and it'll be on Zoom on the 18th at 3:00, I think it is. So,
I'll double check that information. We'll get up the information so it'll be easy for folks to connect. Jamie, thanks for sharing your words. It's been a too gosh darn long since we've had you on the air, and I love having you talk about stuff. The only thing is the poem that I asked you to prepare, I said it did have to have the word aboot in it at least once, so that people knew that you were speaking Canadian, and you didn't do it, Jamie.
Well, maybe in my, you know, in my rambling monologue there, I use some Canadian pronunciations that will.
So people know that you're genuine. I appreciate
that. That's right. That's
Jamie, right. It's always a treat to talk to you. Thank you so very much. And once again, we'll get information not only about Jamie's poem and some of the poets that he mentioned, but the Climate Emergency Poetry Series and the event coming up on the 18th. It'll all be on our website a little later today so you can watch for it. Jamie, thanks again a million.
Thanks, Lisa. Great being here.
Jamie Harvey this morning, our guest on Northland Morning. The Climate Emergency Poetry Series, the next event is coming up April 18th. And he also shared a poem that reminded him of home, that made him feel at home. And I had been kind of half teasing Jamie about sharing a poem in Canadian for quite a while. And he took the time to do that for us this morning.